You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, we're rolling along on a Monday. Active weekend in Houston sports. If you're just now joining us, thank you so much. It's been a big 3 days. We knew two of Houston's biggest superstars were probably going to exit.
Yep.
And it happened within, while it was technically two different days, a Friday and a Saturday, it was within a 10-hour period of time.
It was a lot. I mean,
it was a lot, and of course it had to happen on a weekend.
I woke up on Saturday, and I didn't even know that Correa was off to the Twins for a little bit of time. Because my Friday night and my Saturday was a little different.
Oh, yeah. How's that?
Well, I used to work with John Clayton, who obviously passed away over the weekend, and you know he used to be on my show like every single day at 7:15, and we used to get into arguments all the time. But he was always super sweet to me off the air, and you know when I got canned in Seattle, he was one of the first people that actually reached out to me, and he was caring for his wife Pat, who has MS, and he's done an incredible job as just a husband. Like, that's what I admire the most about the guy. He was one of the most committed and loyal husbands that you'll ever see out there. So that was really sad, and I kind of spent all Friday just thinking about him, and Saturday morning the same thing. And then all of a sudden I see like, oh wow, Carlos Correa signed with the Minnesota Twins. What? Jeez. So it's been a crazy weekend, and it's disappointing on a couple of levels because, look, no matter how you feel about Watson, and I know some people are like, well, he wasn't that successful here. He's still, by far the Texans' best ever quarterback as far as talent goes. And then on top of that, Carlos Correa, I mean, that's two of the best players in sports history of the city that are now gone, no matter how you might feel about one in the case of Watson, and no matter how you might feel about the Astros not bringing back Correa, it is disappointing to see them both gone in one weekend. In a way.
It's been a while, and it's been a while coming for both of them, but to see it happen quickly, for sure. And we will ask you all your reaction to any and everything Carlos Correa. Did he make the right decision? But right now, let's focus on Deshaun Watson. $230 million, yeah. All guaranteed. This, Paul, became the biggest guaranteed NFL contract in history. Aaron Rodgers had that title for about 5 days. Now, while Aaron gets more guaranteed, I think, per year, this is the most total. So a lot of cash, a lot of dough. David Mulugeta of Athletes First negotiated this, which every insider made sure to tweet and give him his shout out. So look for him to sign some of the biggest clients, even more so than he already is, because if he can do this with somebody that has 22 lawsuits, yes, Deshaun is an amazing football player, but if he can get this done under these circumstances, wow. Regardless of how you feel about Deshaun Watson, give his agent David Mulugeta credit where it's due. He played these teams like fiddles.
He does deserve credit, but good God, it was so insufferable to see all of the national media types just kissing the ass of Mulugeta for being able to get this contract. And because I just go back to that tweet that he had, like, keep that same energy. What did you get past? There's still civil suits that are taking place. Congratulations on getting past, the whole being perhaps indicted from a criminal perspective, where it has to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt, if they're going to actually have charges that stick. But there are still 22 civil suits taking place. Oh, so nothing happened because it's just civil suits? Oh, okay. Well, I'm guessing OJ was innocent too, based off of that kind of logic. And by the way, OJ settled for a massive sum of money in civil court because guess what? Everything basically pointed to the fact that he did it. So it's different in this situation because there's no murder or anything like that. But this is one of those things where I'm annoyed by the amount of ball washing that David Mulugeta has gotten over the last couple of days.
I think that what we've seen in media is a progression. And look, agents and reporters have always had this relationship. But with the Deshaun Watson thing, you saw a lot of things happen. For example, Adam Schefter had to clarify a tweet. There's been a lot of clarifying by media members. And look, some of them are happening, because people at their own network, like Mark Sessler from NFL Network, Kay Adams, Cynthia Freeland, all being vocal, which
Craig Rosenthal
is actually impressive, because like MLB Network canned Ken Rosenthal for being like kind of critical of Rob Manfred.
Yeah.
So I will give some of the NFL Network folks some credit.
I do too.
Have tried to say, and not that they're not even railing Deshaun Watson. They're saying there was a problem with like the process, how things have been worded,
the coverage,
how things have happened. Absolutely.
Yeah. And
I think that's big of them.
I agree. And look, to piggyback off of that, no one has more power as far as being a news broker in the NFL and perhaps in all of sports than Adam Schefter.
Nobody.
And not Adam Schefter in the past has been critical of Roger Goodell, who is legitimately the commissioner of the league with that he covers. Now, maybe it's easy for him to do that with Roger Goodell because everyone hates Roger Goodell. But where is that same energy, to quote David Mulugeta, for these agents who are acting like nothing happened? Like that's what bothers me about this. They are critical of everybody except for the people that are giving them all of the information for all of their jobs.
Well, with Adam Schefter, it's because he doesn't work for NFL Network. He works for ESPN.
Right.
So he's always going to be semi-salty because Ian Rapoport gets certain things given to him because he works for the NFL Network.
But
to your point, yeah.
It's annoying that they are like these agents who I'm not going to say they're all like Ari Gold from Entourage, but they are. These are people that will do anything to get their client paid. I saw it with Mark Rogers in Seattle doing all those things behind the scenes, these shady things to get Russell Wilson eventually out of town. And guess what? Success. And these people that cover sports, I guess I'm a little depressed, Vanessa, that these people are at the top of the game making bank. And the critical lens applies to everything except for the snakiest people in the industry as far as the agents who are doing this. They are lucky as hell that they were able to get $230 million to pay off all of these fees that they are paying. Is it not at all distasteful per some of these agents as opposed to a genius move? Excuse me, not per these agents. Per some of these NFL talking heads, per some of these NFL reporters. It's disgusting that he is only going to get $1 million in salary for his first year in a year where he will likely be suspended for the majority of it. I think it's disgusting.
Yeah, you know WhatsApp on our Twitch feed said agents are sources. Yeah, that's the point.
They are.
They're the sources.
But the sources can still be jackasses and a-holes,
totally.
You know, and like to do all these things. So that's what bothers me. I get it. This is how the game works. Maybe I shouldn't be such a naive little idealist or something.
No,
like
I mean,
that,
I think it's disappointing, though, and the way that certain things have been worded. Look, I've said this from the beginning, regardless of how you feel about Deshaun Watson, innocent, guilty, somewhere in between, this was going to be a complicated thing, and this was going to cause a lot of feelings from a lot of people, because you do have people in the sports media industry who say, I'm not going to comment on personal matters. I'm not going to get into that kind of stuff. I'm going to focus on football only. I get it.
I do too, because guess what? You know, in a couple of months, that's what we will be doing. But I
do give credit to the men and women who have just said, hey, let's pause. We're not going to say Deshaun Watson's a terrible person or that he's guilty, but let's focus on the reason that there are so many lawsuits and what could have potentially happened.
I did a little video on Twitch late on Friday, Vanessa, at Galan Says, at Sports Vanessa. We're both on Twitter. And I just outlined everything that the Jenny Frentis report put out there. Because my, I guess, other big frustration is that everyone's just going to forget this. And here's Deshaun Watson in the end. A guy who, first off, stopped playing for a team that had just given him an extension.
Second, 4 months before that.
Correct. Second off, a guy who did all of these things, allegedly, I'm sorry, 22 allegations. Don't even try to tell me that they're all full of it. Because I bet that there were more that didn't actually come to light. And this guy gets out of it with a $230 million contract, $80 million more guaranteed dollars than any player in NFL history. To me, that is just like how someone can win just makes you lose faith a little bit. That this person, he's fine. What about all these people with which he did horrible, disgusting things? And I outlined them all because I don't even feel comfortable reading them on the air. I'm not sure if the FCC allows for it. It's disgusting stuff. And people are going to forget about it in a couple of years, and that bums me out.
I think that we're at a place in society where people are remembering it more. You know, when Kobe Bryant died, there were some conversations about people about what his legacy should actually be. When Ben Roethlisberger retired, there were people talking about what his legacy should actually be and the way that it should be framed. But I hope more is revealed. And notice I'm not saying I hope Deshaun gets locked up or I hope that the women are locked. I'm not hoping for a specific truth to come out. I'm hoping for the truth to come out. I don't want to hear what I want to hear or what you want to hear or what's easy or comfortable. I want to hear the truth. And the way that the world works, unfortunately, that may never come to light. So
yeah.
I hope that we are able to learn more from these civil lawsuits. We knew this would be a circus from the beginning. You have Tony Busby representing the women, who is his own entity. You have Rusty Hardin, who has represented the biggest and the brightest in sports. Maybe not the brightest, but the biggest for sure. So let's see. 3008 on the text line says, will NFL intervene on Deshaun's contract? Opens up a can of worms. That's a great point, because the NFL is going to have to answer to why the Browns were able to cater his contract to possibly protect him financially. That's a really good point by 3008.
Do you think they will, though?
No, I'm just saying, but opening a can of worms, it would open a can of worms. How much can the NFL intervene and call Andrew Berry and the Haslams and say, hey, you can't set aside $1 million of a base salary for somebody to get suspended?
Yeah, but I mean, if they start doing that, that's going to open up a giant
slippery
can
slope
of worms as far as just how contracts go across the NFL. But, you know, when you see that, just to put out the statement that the Browns did, which is just so full of crap, we are acutely aware and empathetic to the high personal sentiments expressed about this decision. Our team's comprehensive evaluation process was of utmost importance due to the sensitive nature of the situation and the complex factors involved. A lot of big words. They put this out there. Come on. You gave him $1 million over the course of the year where he will likely be suspended. Like, shut the hell up. You got a good quarterback. Just be honest.
A statement from NFL spokesperson Brian McCarthy in light of the trade, quote, any transaction would have no effect on the NFL's ongoing and comprehensive investigation of the serious allegations, nor would it affect Watson's status under the CBA and the personal conduct policy. If the league's investigation determines that Watson violated the personal conduct policy, discipline may be imposed pursuant to the policy and the CBA. I mean, the question is, can they prove that he did anything against the personal conduct policy? Other than maybe interacting with women during COVID when they were supposed to be quarantined.
I feel like they definitely can prove it.
We will see if they choose to prove it. They can probably at this point
do
anything they want.
They will look like complete morons if they don't. But the thing is, they could probably like rationalize it by like, well, he was kind of suspended.
Rationalization is scary.
Mm-hmm. Because anything can be rationalized.
Rationalization is scary.
The things we rationalize ourselves, like rationalizing the fact that I like downed a whole bottle of Prosecco yesterday. Like there's no rationalization of that. I'm a degen.
We need a psychologist to
I'm disgusting.
To call us and tell us what's wrong
with
us.
I'm a dirty little boy.
All right, coming up, something is being unsealed that may involve your Houston Astros, but it's not necessarily going to reveal them cheating. That's coming up next.
ESPN 97.5. Breaking down the Houston sports scene with V and Pauly G on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Richardson, that is Paul Gallant. I'm at Sports Vanessa. He is at Gallant Says. Our producer is Cam. He is awesome. I don't want to be taken to HR, but I really like Cam in like a not creepy way. In a not creepy way. I think he's so nice and does such a good job.
I am uncomfortable because you acknowledge that there might be some uncomfort in the air now.
No,
HR.
No. I'm saying that if we had a female producer and you were like, oh, Ashley's awesome, wouldn't you be like, wait, but not in a weird way?
Well, see, listen, maybe not. I don't know. I don't know. I have old coworkers back at other
That's
stations.
True. I've always been the youngest too.
Abused that privilege.
Oh, well, Cam's doing a great job. He's our rock star producer. Hey, we're rolling along on a Monday. We've had a lot to talk about with Deshaun Watson, and we will get to Carlos Correa. But there is a little bit of breaking news coming in within the last hour.
About time.
Appeals court. This is per the NJ. What is the NJ?
The NewJersey.com.
Okay.
NJ.com.
Appeals court rules letter that allegedly shows MLB hid Yankees sign stealing should be unsealed. So when I was covering the World Series in October and Rob Manfred was here and we were doing interviews with him, people kept yelling at him from the stands, unseal the letter! Unseal the letter! And most of you probably know the background on this, but there is a letter that allegedly shows that the MLB helped the Yankees hide sign stealing. So an appeals court rules that should be unsealed.
And it should. And I can't wait for it to, so that all of those whining losers who consistently choke in the playoffs can just shut up. I don't know if you saw this last week, Vanessa, but Matt Holliday, who played for the Yankees for like 5 seconds, he made some allegations about how, yeah, we don't know what things would have been like had the Astros, you know, not cheated in the 2017 ALCS. I don't know, maybe scored more than one run in the last two games offensively, especially when Lance McCullers is throwing you 26 straight curveballs. I don't think, 27. I don't think that you needed trash can banging to figure that out. What's funny is, Vanessa, the Yankees, they didn't want this letter to be revealed from Rob Manfred to Brian Cashman because it would wreck the team's reputation. They said that the letter should never have been introduced to the court in the first place since they weren't part of the initial lawsuit. Because obviously you had the Red Sox Apple Watch scandal, and the Yankees supposedly, all they have been alleged to have done is improperly use a dugout phone in 2017.
I mean, it's like they're all doing it just in different ways, right? I mean,
yeah.
what we continue to see with any time there are revelations made or people, and I'm not excusing what the Astros did because they certainly did it at a very advanced level. It was wrong, all this stuff. What do we teach the children? Blah, blah, blah. But what, I mean, what I'm excited to see with this letter, if all of it is ever revealed, is how in-depth they went and how much the MLB tried to help them hide it. Because that is a major, major issue. And look, we probably overplay. Like, I'm one that always calls the Yankees the golden child of the MLB. I don't think that's a lie.
Manfred grew up a Yankee fan, too, so you got a little protection there.
But how far did it actually go? Because if there is concrete evidence, in my mind, Rob Manfred needs to be gone.
I think that there was a lot of things going on, and I think if you're looking for something to prove it, that's going to be tricky. But I just find it remarkable that all players who are active in baseball have totally shut up about sign stealing. When's the last person that's an active player? Because Matt Holliday talked about it. Matt Holliday's out of the league. What was the last active player that talked about the Astros sign stealing, who talked about just sign stealing in general? I think it was going on a lot of different teams. From what I heard, the Dodgers were involved. The Rangers were involved, which is unfortunate for the Rangers. Right. I mean, not a lot of success.
The Rangers were not doing it very well.
No,
apparently.
They weren't. But there were a lot of teams that were doing this in some way, shape, or form. Was it as nuanced as what the Astros were doing? Honestly, I don't know. I'm guessing no. That doesn't make what the Astros did right either. But you can't understand why so many teams might have been doing it. When one team does it to great success, the Red Sox do it, the Astros do it. All of these teams are doing things like this because they are seeing other teams do it and are nervous. And go to Game 7 of that 2017 World Series. Lance McCullers, I remember having a conversation with him on the air where there were so many signs being crossed up over the course of the game, which explains why there were a million wild pitches over the course of Game 7. Both of those teams were so paranoid that the other team was stealing signs that they acted as such, and things got very messy, I think, as a byproduct of it. You can't tell me that it was just one team, and I would like to see this unsealed so that the Yankees can kind of get their due, because they've been whining and complaining about it the most, and considering how many times that they have just lost in the playoffs, I feel like they should be shutting the actual bleep up.
I think that this will reveal a lot, and what I will say about this Astros team and the guys that have since left is I think they're at the point to where they don't care what people think of them, calling them cheaters, et cetera, et cetera. But the narrative of the asterisk needing, you know, to be there for the World Series, certainly we'll see how that develops. But glad that this appeals court, the letter will be unsealed. Speaking of exits in Houston, we've talked a lot about Deshaun Watson exiting Houston
right
this weekend for Cleveland. Carlos Correa will head to the Twins. I did not see this coming. It's a short-term deal for a lot of money. There's an option, so I definitely don't think he is retiring in Minneapolis. But he hired Scott Boras. They apparently, you know, looked at their options and decided that this really short stint, high money, would be a good deal. Astros fans, though, not happy with Jim Crane and James Click.
No, because if we're to believe John Granato, and I do, it's that James Click and Jim Crane ghosted Scott Boras in Correa's camp.
Do you have the Granato tweet?
Yeah, let me go grab it really quickly.
I would like to see that. So John Granato, who of course he and Lance Zierlein host the morning show before ours, very plugged in and doesn't tweet these things often, but when he does, he's usually in the know. What did he say?
The Astros ghosted Carlos Correa this week. James Click said he would get back to them and never did. And Jim Crane did not respond at all to Scott Boras' texts. That makes much more sense than the Astros not matching a deal for 3 years, $105.3 million that includes opt-outs after the first two seasons. Now, there were some texts earlier today, Vanessa, that were actually commending the Astros for what they did. They felt like, hey, you know, when it comes down to it, Carlos, get yours, but you can't be mad at ownership for not wanting to have the two highest paid position players on the payroll, even if it's 1 year or two. And somebody else had said, look, the Astros want a guy who is going to be committed to the future. And that's fine. But if this is all it was going to take to keep him for one more year, why say no?
Right.
You know, fine. Maybe you don't get to sign him for the long-term extension that you would like to assign him to. But I just feel like this is pettiness. I think that this is Jim Crane getting mad at Scott Boras. And I could see why. First off, what happened at the end of the 2019 season? After the Astros lose in the World Series to the Washington Nationals, there's Garrett Cole putting on Team Boras hat. And, you know, the body's been out for 5 seconds. You know, they just got killed by the Nationals in the World Series. And then on top of that, look, the Astros were one of four teams that did not want to agree to this CBA. I think that Jim Crane does not like Scott Boras. And you know what? Like, I don't blame him for that, but that's not how you should be acting. You got to swallow your pride here. You got to play ball and deal with the mess that is Scott Boras. Every team has to, and I'm sure most owners hate Scott Boras.
I think that it's funny because we've talked a lot about David Mulugeta, of course, who just negotiated Deshaun Watson's most guaranteed money in the history of the NFL. And if you're an NFL team, you do not want to be on bad terms with David Mulugeta. If you're an MLB team, I don't think you want to be on bad terms with Scott Boras. Here's where I will play a little devil's advocate for Jim Crane and James Click, in that they probably wanted this wrapped up, and we don't know the back and forth that happened before.
No, you're right.
And we don't know if how much Correa was asking for. And maybe it got to the point to where Carlos didn't want to be here, but that doesn't seem likely. That does not seem likely.
And who in this clubhouse didn't want him here?
Yeah.
And look, this is like a first moment where maybe Astros players are going to be looking upstairs and wondering, what? But I imagine they felt somewhat like this with George Springer. Most of these guys are professionals, and they realize that there are going to be players who leave. But, you know, I would just circle back to something I just covered in Seattle, from the Seattle perspective of it. When the Astros traded for Kendall Graveman, people in Seattle, especially in the clubhouse, were pissed. They were angry. Now, they haven't been through a year where they were competitive, and at the same time, they haven't seen guys that were a part of that team that was, like, a very young one, leave for other greener pastures because that team was trying to make itself better. But when you have a track record of doing things that would piss off your entire clubhouse, and the Mariners certainly do, then you could see why a clubhouse would react to this and maybe start to lose a little bit of faith in the direction. I don't know how you justify or rationalize this to any of the current players on this team. Considering this team has made it to 5 straight American League Championship Series, if this was the deal that was on the table, you couldn't match it. I don't know. To me, it doesn't feel like you want to win as much as you definitely do. Fine, tell me that Jeremy Peña is going to be good. But at some point, some of these players that you're bringing up who have been awesome, you've had a great farm system, some of these players aren't going to turn into the guys that they've been turning into. And I doubt that Jeremy Peña is going to ever be on the same page as Juan Carlos Correa. No fault of his own. That's an impossible situation to be put into.
All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we did hear from Nick Caserio after that Deshaun Watson trade. We'll talk about the haul that he got back. Plus, Kelvin Sampson goes shirtless. That's coming up.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Welcome back to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, we are rolling along on a Tuesday. I'm Vanessa Richardson. He is Paul Gallant. I'm at Sports Vanessa on Twitter. He's at Gallant Says. Our producer is Cam. And we did hear from Nick Caserio after the Deshaun Watson trade. I was happy about this. I think I'm big as a reporter on meet with the media. Owners, GMs, meet with the media. And he did. Now, does Nick Caserio ever get in-depth or reveal too much?
No.
But we did hear from him. Let's talk about the haul that the Texans got back. What did you think about 3 first-round picks, right? A fourth and a fifth.
Right, and they traded a fourth back.
They traded a fifth back, I thought.
Was it a fifth? Okay. The details.
Regardless, yeah.
The three first round. Look, I don't give a damn about the later round picks. I think some people do a little bit too much here in this town. I don't care. They are late round picks. They exist. You will be able to trade them for veteran players who maybe are not thrilled with their current situations or that teams are looking to release. That's what I look at a late round draft pick as. Capital to do that as opposed to, hey, I'm going to find somebody late on. Now, if you can find somebody in the fourth and fifth round, great. But that's
right.
Not likely to happen. Anyway, as far as this goes, you got three first-round picks. You came into this situation, which seemed borderline impossible. You have this guy who is facing all sorts of allegations of sexual misconduct and more. And you come in as the general manager of this team with a guy who does not want to be here and then has all of this stuff come out at the same time. And you were able to get three first-round picks for him. You were able to do what was necessary. This is a major win for Nick Caserio. This is not going to determine his entire resume, but, I mean, you bring in somebody like this to solve a problem, and instead of taking the easiest offer or the first possible offer to just get the situation over with, which is what Bill O'Brien would have done. That's what he did with DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah.
Instead, he held out, and he got the best possible deal that they could. And look, it was about money, clearly, for Deshaun Watson. So the Browns sweetened things up with that $230 million contract.
Guaranteed.
But that Nick Caserio was patient. Got all of those offers, weighed them, presented them to Deshaun Watson, and then it all comes to a conclusion like this. Great. I mean, they can turn the page finally from one of the more embarrassing chapters in NFL history.
I was surprised that there were no players involved. But to your point, I mean, the other thing that people need to remember is that Nick Caserio came into this situation.
Mm-hmm.
He is not the one that gave Deshaun Watson the no-trade clause.
Right.
He is not the one that, you know, like, he had to deal with a lot. I'm not saying I feel sorry for him, but he said this over and over again in his press conference. He's a solution-based guy. He's not going to dwell on the past because media members want him to, right?
Right.
I was at the press conference. He got three or four of those, how much does this stress you out? And he didn't give into it. He's like, yeah, I mean, it is what it is. We're solution-based, et cetera. So what are they going to do with Davis Mills? Would they consider drafting a quarterback? Bringing in a veteran, who's to say? We knew he wouldn't get much, but he did say this.
I certainly wouldn't jump to any conclusions, I would say, specific to Davis. Davis had opportunities last year, did a nice job of those opportunities, but we're kind of starting from scratch here a little bit. I would say when you get into the draft, you really don't want to necessarily eliminate any one particular position, any one particular player. You just want to look at it in totality and just figure out what makes the most sense, you know, for the organization.
Good job.
Good job.
Good job, Nick. You said nothing on that one. So, look, I don't feel like there's going to be serious competition for Davis Mills this coming season. But if they're going to go after a backup quarterback or something like that, I just want the guy to have some sort of upside. I don't think that you go with any player on this team with a guy that you're buying low with a lot of the contracts that you're signing. You're obviously signing a lot of guys to one-year deals. But I don't want anyone on this team that does not have potential for growth. And if I am going to bring in a backup quarterback, I don't want Andy Dalton or something like that.
So you want somebody that could trend upwards.
Yeah. And look, I don't think Marcus Mariota will, but at least Marcus Mariota, as far as being a gadget player, can help you out as a, you know, kind of running quarterback, maybe wildcat situations or things like that. So I feel like if I'm in this situation as the Texans, a guy like Andy Dalton, who Bill Barnwell suggested today, no. I want, if you're going to bring in a backup quarterback or you're going to bring in a veteran, let's have it be somebody that actually is different as opposed to some guy who is towards the end of his career. Because I don't really feel like you are going to get, in terms of an Andy Dalton, this great mentor. Because some people assume, hey, you sign a veteran quarterback. Oh, he's going to want to be the mentor. No, Andy Dalton's going to look at Davis Mills and say, I can beat him out.
See, that's what my requirement for a backup quarterback for the Texans is somebody that obviously could win you a couple games if need be, but I want somebody that knows they're a backup and does not care, a.k.a. Case Keenum, A.J. McCarron, because remember the reports from last year after his stint with Dallas was that Andy Dalton still thought of himself as a starter.
Right.
I don't want somebody that thinks of themselves as a starter. I'm rolling with Davis Mills. I'm not saying we need to fit him for a gold jacket, but I liked what we saw from him in his rookie year, and I want them to roll with him.
Yeah, I think that's the way to go as far as, you know, who you have right now. But I also think if you're going to bring somebody else in, just make sure that there was something that could potentially be tapped into. You know, Marcus Mariota was a former second overall pick. I'm not a fan of Mariota. It never happened. I think he's a little bit too timid when it comes to throwing the football downfield. You got to have a guy in this league who has stones. But if we're talking about as a backup player, that guy can do things for you that I think a lot of other players in this league can't. He's one of the fastest quarterbacks I've ever seen.
Meanwhile, Nick Caserio, while meeting with the media, I actually asked him how many teams were interested in Deshaun Watson. Now, we know that there was a Final Four, but we had also heard Indy had made a call. We had heard a couple other teams had made a call. So I wanted to know how many teams inquired, their GM made a call to Nick Caserio about Deshaun Watson, and here's what Nick Caserio said.
Yeah, I would say there was a fair amount of teams. What we try to do is bring the teams that had, I would say, a legitimate interest, and that was kind of based on, I would say, maybe the compensation that was presented. I think there was a certain threshold that I kind of had established in order to make it a legitimate discussion, and if we got to that point, then we can gauge a little bit further. So, you know, I would say I don't want to get into the exact number, but, you know, it was probably a few more than, you know, however many teams that everybody was reporting on here at the end.
A few more than people were reporting at the end. Well, what people were reporting at the end was basically the four, and then Indianapolis had called, and then I don't remember if they were report. So if five, a few more, I would say, like, I'm thinking like the 8 to 10 range, which I say all that to say this. I knew that I wouldn't get a specific answer when I asked Nick Caserio that. Okay. Because he doesn't give specific.
Ask him anything.
And he does a good job of protecting the Texans. Like, in his defense, he does his job. But there was a narrative that teams were not going to touch Deshaun Watson with a 10-foot pole. And regardless of what you think about the accusations, regardless of whether you believe Deshaun Watson or not, I knew that that would never be the case. So if there's, quote-unquote, a few more than what was being reported, it's reported there were 5, 6 that made some serious calls about him. I'm thinking there's 8 to 9, maybe even 10, which dissipates the myth that there were not teams that would touch him with a 10-foot pole.
Because all these teams are soulless bastards, and they don't care. I mean, let's be honest. They are. The Browns put out that statement acting like they did their homework on him. Shut the actual hell up. Like, what are you talking about? You didn't. All you did was say to yourself, let's do some homework. Is Deshaun Watson better than Baker Mayfield? Let's think on this. Ponder. Like, that's the only homework that they did. And now they're saying all these things, too, which is hilarious to me. Yeah, well, we're going to, you know, we know that he needs to make a difference in the community, and we're going to take him to classes. Like, what are these classes going to be? Like, try not to, I don't know, force people giving you a massage to, you know, give you a happy ending or something like that? Like, I don't know what this training is going to be. It made me laugh. They're trying to make it seem like they care. They only care about the bottom line. They're desperate. They've been a joke for a long time. Jimmy Haslam isn't exactly the most... Listen, Jimmy Haslam, Rusty Harden...
They could have just said
Deshaun
that,
Watson.
Though. Like, people would have... Sorry, go ahead.
No. I got nothing else other
people
than...
People would have respected it more if they would have just said...
They wouldn't have respected really it anyway. I don't know. But you kind of do have to give yourself reasonable doubt. But, I mean, come on. Like, Deshaun Watson and Jimmy Haslam, they love them some Rusty Harden. And Rusty Harden... He has earned every single cent that he has from those two.
8577, as far as backup quarterback, says the Texans did sign Kyle Allen. They did sign Kyle Allen. They also have Jeff Driskel. But Jeff Driskel had been used as a tight end. We're talking about an actual backup quarterback that could, like, play in and potentially win games.
Yeah, I'd rather have, like, and it's funny, they used to have him, Taylor Heinicke or something like that, than a Kyle Allen. I'm not really sure what's going to happen with him in Washington. I honestly think that Washington should keep him if they're smart because, you know, who knows what happens with Carson Wentz. You know, Wentz is going to figure it out this time around. Sure. He's going to find out how to be accountable. He's going to find out how to be a good teammate. He's going to find out how to make, I don't know, other people like him.
Here's what's interesting, though. Ron Rivera and Scott Turner, the offensive coordinator, and some of those guys have said that they have heard, Ron Rivera directly said that he's actually been hearing different things about Carson Wentz. And look, I mean, I know where the information was coming from. I know the Colts did not like him. Front office had issues with him. But the Commanders clearly think that he can be a leader, and the Commanders clearly think that they can get something out of him. I think it may be with Carson Wentz at the end of the day a little bit about fit.
Right.
He didn't fit in Indianapolis. He didn't fit in with what Jim Irsay liked. Frank Reich thought he could get more out of him than what he did. But he may be semi-successful in Washington, and that would be interesting to see. I say maybe, and I emphasize the maybe, because I do not believe in Carson Wentz, and I never have. But it is interesting to hear Ron Rivera, who's a very genuine and honest guy, by all accounts, say, yeah, I've actually heard Carson Wentz may not be that terrible. So
that's what you tell yourself.
That's what you tell yourself to convince yourself on.
So the Browns are doing with Watson.
Yeah. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we put a bow on this Monday. UH heading to the Sweet 16, and one of my favorite NBA players ever not happy with a call that was actually helpful to the Cougars. That's next.
ESPN 97.5. You're locked in with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Hey, shout out to Kelvin Sampson. I mean, not only did he take the University of Houston Cougars to the Final Four last year, but with an injured roster and a lot of humps to kind of try to climb over and hills to climb, they are going to the Sweet 16. University of Houston heading to the city of brotherly love after they defeated Illinois. Kelvin Sampson took his shirt off in the locker room. It was fun. The announcers had a lot of fun with that.
Seven straight seasons of 20-plus wins. And I know, Vanessa, that he got a contract extension just a year ago, March 9th of last year. There's a part of me that feels like he deserves another extension. They have gone to the Sweet 16 without two of their best players. And I just love the way that they play. It's nonstop defense. It's aggressive rebounding. They even admit we're not that good at offense, but they do all of the annoying things that I love about basketball, which most basketball purists don't like. But listen, as a crappy pickup player who is only good at defending and hustling, I just like the way that they play. There's an old school way with which they go about. And congratulations to them. I mean, I did not think that they would be making it to the Sweet 16. I figured they'd win round one and that there was a chance that they would lose in the second game. But here they are. And I mean, is it impossible for them to get to the Final Four again? I mean,
it's not impossible. And it's because of the things you said.
Right.
Yeah.
You get to this point, who actually knows? And I mean, on a weekend where Baylor went down. Baylor, I think, is the most impressive team out there. And, I mean, shoot, North Carolina, they're wearing those Columbia blue jerseys. I'm like, wow, you're really trying to pull the Oilers off here. They're up 25 points, and they blew it, and it went to overtime, but they still hung on and won. So Baylor's done. Crazy stuff happens in this tournament. Kentucky loses to St. Peter's, who somehow also made it to the Sweet 16.
My favorite thing about Kelvin Sampson, if you ever tune into one of his press conferences, not only does he give very, very long answers, he's always so honest. He'll be like, yeah, man, we're really not that good offensively.
Yeah.
Or he'll say things like, man,
but he's right.
We do not have the best team. And he's always right. And his players hear that and they go, all right, damn, okay. But he always keeps it so, so real with them. He is not the kind of guy that's going to sit on your kid's couch. He's a good recruiter, but he's not going to sit on your parents' couch and lie. I mean, he is as real as it gets. I have a lot of respect for him, his son, Kellen, who's an assistant coach, and then his daughter, Lauren, who's super involved as well.
You see so many coaches in college basketball essentially have lifetime contracts, even if things maybe aren't going the way that they once were.
Calipari.
Yeah, John Calipari is a perfect one to bring up, especially after the way
losing
things went
to St. Peter's.
Yep. St. Peter's is still alive, though, so it looks like a little bit better of a loss.
He's
now
hoping they win the whole damn thing.
Or at least get to the Elite Eight. Yeah, I'm with you on that front, because sometimes it is just flukish luck that teams get to this point in the tournament. I would say that last year with my alma mater, Syracuse, getting to the Sweet 16, they are so unathletic. Like, it was so funny watching the Cougs play them, because the Cougs just like slowly like pulled off their wings and stuff. It was kind of mean and barbaric, but I get it. Like, but anyway, in this situation here, you know, I look at Sampson. I think you got to give him a lifetime contract. I know you just gave him an extension. Whatever. You got to keep this guy around as long as you possibly can. And I guess he'll be 71 at the end of this contract. I don't care. Did he look 71 taking
absolutely
that shirt off?
Not.
No.
Well, you kind of roped me into that one. Absolutely not. it wasn't meant to be that enthusiastic. But there was a call that was really bad during the game.
Oh, God. That was so bad.
There was a dunk. He didn't hang on the rim. It was an Illinois player.
He was going really fast.
Yeah.
He hung on to it, and they called a technical foul. And at that point, I mean, it was a, what, it was a one-possession game, two-possession game?
It was a really important part of the game. And my guy, Reggie Miller, who I have a deep affinity and love for, actually got into exactly why that was a bad call for safety purposes, and I thought this was interesting.
Brother Melendez!
No. No, no. Absolutely not. I'm sorry. First of all, his momentum is taking him with him. He has to swing back. You cannot give this young man a technical foul for this. He's not showing up or anything. Because if he doesn't, he is going to almost kill himself. You've got to swing on the rim right here.
Yeah, so what Reggie Miller is saying is you physically have to swing or else your momentum keeps you going and you break your tailbone because you land the wrong way or whatever. He was absolutely right. And here's what I liked about this, with all seriousness, even though I stand Reggie Miller forever and ever. A lot of times announcers or whoever will say, oh, awful call. And you're like, okay, great, why? He actually explained why, like, logistically he needed to swing on the rim. So I appreciated that from Reggie.
It's weird because I think we're all low-key happy the call happened, even though it was a messed up call. I mean, it shouldn't have happened. I'll be honest. Like, I'll see a bad call happen. I'll acknowledge the call's badness online. But there are times where I'm like, yeah, I'm cool with that call. It's fine. And you're allowed to be cool with that call. But there's no denying that that call totally messed up all momentum that Illinois had. Because the Cougs closed out the game, I think it was a 22-11 run. So, and it really seemed like in that moment in time, uh-oh, okay, that was a breakaway dunk on a steal, and are you going to be able to hold them off? You don't exactly score that well, and it felt like that just took a lot of momentum out of it. Why are the refs calling a technical foul in a game like this, period? Like, I feel in the tournament, the only thing that should be warranting a technical foul is someone punching somebody else. You know, let these guys play. This is the biggest game of most of these players' lives. And you're going to make a difference in the game based off of something as minor as that. Like, that is when it becomes the ref show. That is when it's Frank Drebin as fake Enrico Palazzo in The Naked Gun. You know, like doing essentially a dance at home plate. Like you're Angel Hernandez or something like that. No, that can't happen. And that ref doesn't deserve to referee in another tournament game ever again. The rest of his career.
It was bad and he got put down for that. And he deservedly so got put down for that. But Kelvin Sampson dancing without a shirt, a major conversation. He's actually only 66 years old. Kelvin Sampson.
Really?
Just looked it up on the internet. There's an article on Bro Bible that is basically like a 66-year-old dancing without a shirt is why we love March Madness. Mm-hmm. But he celebrated accordingly after the Cougars took down 4-seed Illinois. First time in the program's history that it beat a single-digit seed in the NCAA tournament. So a big deal for the University of Houston Cougars. Congratulations to them. I know that football and baseball is always the talker around here, but really important stuff happening and happy for them. All right, credit where it's due. The Bengals went all in on protecting Joe Burrow. They signed Lyle Collins, Alex Kappa, and Teddy Karras. He will be protected. Those are some really, really high caliber players. I actually went to middle school with Teddy. Shout out to Teddy Karras.
So what kind of a middle schooler was Teddy?
Large.
Okay, he was large.
And then he ended up moving to, so he lived in Terre Haute, Indiana, because his dad was a coach in Terre Haute.
Methville.
And then, yes. And then for high school, Teddy went to Cathedral in Indianapolis, which is about an hour away because his dad had moved and took over the program at Marion University. But regardless, Teddy's a great guy. These are three really strong signings. And according to a lot of reporters, Joe Burrow and his girlfriend had these guys and their wives over, sold them on Cincinnati. I mean, that's one of the things, in my opinion, that makes Joe Burrow special. And so we'll see what happens. But that, I mean, they were a protected quarterback away from it being a much closer Super Bowl.
We'll see if they can keep, though, a lot of the other things that went in their favor on the same level this coming season. Because, their defense played well. Is their defense actually that good? Or did they just get hot at the right time and next year we'll see a defense that isn't that good? So I'm curious about that side of things. And also, for some reason, I'm just thinking about an athlete that I went to school now, because, like, you're flexing with Teddy Karras.
So no, I'm not flexing.
I'm kidding. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
When I was in elementary school, St. Paul's Elementary School in Hingham, Massachusetts, there was a family called the Boyles. And naturally, like most Irish folks, there's like a family of like 8 or 9 kids.
Then they're all really athletic.
Right. So there's Brian. And Brian like ended up playing in the NHL for a long period of time. And Brian was, I remember this just because he was in 7th grade and I'm in elementary school. And Brian was like 6'2". And Also, Brian would always play Jesus in the, like, around Easter time, we would do, like, a Stations of the Cross, like, nativity deal. Not nativity, my bad. But the Stations of the Cross.
Yeah.
So, like, we'd have this assembly, and there's future NHL player Brian Boyle just wandering around, like, with basically no shirt on and, like, with a cross. It was weird. It was kind of weird in retrospect. But, yeah, Brian Boyle, massive elementary school classmate of mine. Also play Jesus. So there you go.
I love it. I don't know who else I went to school. Danny Etling was the opposing school. Danny Etling.
Oh.
Played quarterback at LSU and then has been a journeyman in the NFL for practice squads. But if you're in Las Vegas and you go to a pool, you almost always see women at the pool in Las Vegas.
That is actually the only reason I go to Las Vegas is to go to the pool and to see women.
Probably do. Yep. And it gets messy because everything is messy for you.
Yeah.
But
oh, yeah. God. I was drunk texting Vanessa on Saturday. So
it was very emotional.
I know. You know what?
This guy
was an emotionally charged recap of what I was going through.
The only thing I said was like, hey, you good? What's going on?
Yeah, hey, you good? And I was just like, listen, this, I'm dealing with the absolute worst person ever.
I get four texts.
They're long.
In a row.
I was mad. I was mad at somebody. Anyway.
This girl that flirts with me, usually flirts with me. Now she's being mean. And then another girl flirted with me. That girl's not flirting with me. I'm just so mad. Why are people so...
Basically, yeah. I'm an emotional drunk, and probably I need to clean up the drinking a little bit forward. Anyway.
Sorry.
No, it's good. We're fine. We're essentially family here on this show.
Yeah. Pools in Las Vegas, always women. Adam Burke, at Skating Tripods, tweeted out a picture that's like a really, really long view and a wide shot, as we say in TV, of this pool in Las Vegas, and there's a bunch of men. I mean, when I say a bunch of men, I mean this pool is almost entirely men because it's in front of these six
Sausage
different
Factory.
Massive TV screens.
Oh, is this Circa?
I think so.
Yeah, that's Circa. Yeah. Yo, Circa's sick. I went there for an NFL Sunday this past September in Vegas, and yeah, it's the coolest thing ever. There's a casino inside, but there's also like massive televisions up on this wall and tons of pools. But that would have been definitely very disappointing still that there would be, that many guys.
It was all guys. I mean, you have to think that some of the ladies like March Madness, but definitely mostly guys there in Vegas.
Definitely mostly guys. And, I thought about going to the Golden Nugget on Saturday morning. So I
you
would
didn't
watch
need to
games.
Do anything else this week.
No, I didn't.
You had a full
I stayed
weekend.
In on Friday, though. I did stay in on
That's
Friday.
True.
You know, I was a good... behaved boy on Friday, but yesterday and on Saturday, temptations, they got the best of me. Classic Paul. Classic weekends. But yeah, Circa's awesome. If you haven't been to Las Vegas since Circa has come in, it's down on the old strip, too, like where all the old school stuff is. And
oh, it's on the old strip.
Yeah, it's actually, I think, helped make the old strip kind of like a thing again.
Revitalized.
Which is great, because, you know, I think the old strip has got a lot more character. All the new bougie places, they're a little bit over the top.
But that's not what I'm into.
No.
Yeah.
You're not into the new bougie places?
Not into the bougie places.
Yeah, I'm not either, especially when you go to Vegas. You're going to like be putting your kids' college funds into the hands of gamblers and stuff. You know, it is expensive top to bottom. Circa's cool. Check it out.
0061 says Paul. Nope, not reading that one.
Oh. Oh, what did they say? Was it me? I'm sure it was.
It was. Let's see. 9392 says, I'm a ref and he double clutched the rim. That's the only thing I see worthy of a tech. Yeah, I mean, double clutching the rim, I guess. But again, when you hear Reggie Miller break down why he was just trying to protect himself, it does seem like a ridiculous call.
Yeah, look, it's in the flow of the game. Like, know your role in this game. You're the ref. You are not supposed to take attention away from the game. And what are people talking about after this game?
Yep.
They're not talking about the Cougars' great win. They're talking about something else entirely.
More March Madness on the way. I'm sure more will be revealed regarding Deshaun Watson. Maybe we'll hear more from our guy John Granato on all things Carlos Correa.
I got it. Yeah, we need more on the Correa thing.
We do. All right, that's a wrap on Vanessa and Gallant, the Killer Bees, with Jeremy Branham and Joel Blank coming up next.
ESPN 97.5.